Rancho Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us on the newest episode of the Calcio Land podcast. So because of this time of year, and we're going to get into a lot of transfer news, it's very important that I let you know when we're recording this podcast. So we're recording this at 5 p.m. Boston time in Italy. It's 11 p.m. at night. So if anything, this is on Thursday. So if anything changes, please don't hold it too much against us. We're recording it at this time, and everything we're going to discuss today is as it stands at the moment. So I am joined by our great friend, co-host, producer, Alex Goldberg. You guys know he's a huge Chelsea fan. There's a lot going on at the club. So I know a lot of people want some clarification on what's going on with Sarri. So let me ask you, Alex, how concerned and how worried are you with the coaching situation with your favorite team?
All right. Well, on a scale from 1 to 10, David, 10 being supremely concerned to the point where I'm almost shaking, a nine. I can't condone the way Chelsea is going about their summer so far. The number one thing was to get your new manager appointed, to get rid of your current manager. And I can't believe that he's still the current manager, and that's Antonio Conte. That was the number one order of business. And now it seems like Chelsea are just dragging their feet. And something that really concerns me is when the World Cup is in play, when you have the World Cup, and that only comes around every 4 years, so I feel like Chelsea should have known, all right, this summer we need to act a little bit quicker. You got to make your moves or at least have somewhat of a direction by this time. I mean, look at Napoli. They appoint Ancelotti. Look at Arsenal. They appoint Emery. You got to make your move. And Chelsea, it just feels like they're second-guessing themselves, and that makes me so nervous as a fan of that team. So, David, you touched on it. Maurizio Sarri is one of the most popular people to be rumored to go to Chelsea, although I'm getting pessimistic. But still, can you give us the latest on Maurizio Sarri?
Absolutely. So again, I want to stress we're recording this on Thursday, 11 p.m. Italy time. As of now, there's been no updates on our site, on Di Marzio's site, on the situation. His release clause expires today, and I think there's a lot of confusion on what that means, what's going on, what's the impact as if this deadline expires. So I think it's important to take a step back and go over why the clause was put in the first place and the events that happened around it. And I want to stress to fans, I get it. Everyone kind of takes the perspective of the team they support, but try to look at it from Napoli's perspective. So Napoli took a big gamble when they hired Sarri. He was at Empoli, did really well, had never coached in Serie A before arriving up with Empoli, was very impressive. He wasn't their top choice. They would have loved to have Jurgen Klopp. So they took a gamble on Sarri. And, you know, they put a lot of options in his contract because they weren't sure if it would pan out or not with him. And as part of this deal, where Napoli basically had a series of one-year deals with Sarri that they could keep exercise, Sarri got in return this exit clause that is about to expire. So that's why the clause was put in the first place. Now, since then, Napoli no longer has the series of one-year options with Sarri. They have him on the contract till 2020. But again, let's look at the events of what happened. Napoli's choice was to bring back Sarri. He met with President De Laurentiis last week, or maybe it was a little bit before then. We talked about it on Di Marzio's side. They had the dinner with the team. Everything seemed fine. Napoli was just waiting for Sarri to come back to them and say, I'm not going to exercise the clause. I'm going to coach the team. That didn't happen. The version from De Laurentiis, Napoli's president, is that Sarri just never responded. If you know anything about De Laurentiis, he's a stubborn and prideful man. I think he's done an outstanding job as Napoli's president, but he's all about his team. He's not here to appease a lot of other players, coaches, and definitely not other clubs. So because Sarri took his time to get back to him, De Laurentiis was like, okay, you want to do that? I'm just going to bring in Ancelotti instead. So I know there's a lot of fans that are like, okay, well, why could you have two coaches under contract at the same time? In Serie A, this is actually fairly common. I think at one point Milan might have even had three coaches on the contract, because they had Seedorf under a long deal, Inzaghi, Brocchi. So this is by no means uncommon. Now, why would a Serie A team hypothetically have, why would they have two managers on the contract? There are instances, Genoa did this recently, where they sacked their manager, Juric, brought in someone else, that didn't work out, and then they still had Juric under contract, and they brought him back at the team. Now, the odds of this happening with Sarri and Ancelotti are slim to none, but technically you can have multiple managers under contract. Now, De Laurentiis is a very stubborn man. Sarri's leverage with the exit clause, really, he has the leverage until the clause expires. After that, De Laurentiis can just keep him under contract and tell another club, great, you want Sarri, you're going to have to pay the exit clause anyway, or something along the lines. He's going to want compensation for that, because Sarri is an asset in his mind. He's not the manager at this time that earns a huge amount of money. So it's, and Napoli for an Italian club is in good shape financially. So from Napoli's perspective, Sarri's chance to get out is the exit clause. If he doesn't do it, then they have more of the leverage. Now, the other factor for Chelsea, and you spoke very well about this, Alex, is Conte is still technically their manager right now. So on top of having to pay Sarri's exit clause, Chelsea would also have to pay off Conte, and he has a substantial buyout clause in his contract. So this is by no means a straightforward situation. This isn't so much, okay, Chelsea has a vacancy, Sarri's available, what's taking so long? There's just both Sarri's clause and Conte's clause. So as far as I can tell, it's really not out of the question that there could be another manager that comes at Chelsea, someone that doesn't have an exit clause. The name we keep hearing a lot is Laurent Blanc. So, you know, the French coach. So maybe that happens. So this is a situation that is very complicated, but I want to stress that Napoli technically could have both Ancelotti and Sarri under contract, and just keep Sarri maybe out of spite, or saying, we have an asset, you want him, you're going to have to pay it. So that's the main storyline. Again, we're recording this at 11 Italy time on Thursday. Things could change, but as it stands, this is what the situation is like. Now, the other big storyline, and there's a lot going on right now, is all this rumor on this potential swap on Icardi and Higuain. So, Alex, let me get your perspective. You become a Serie A fanatic. Let's take the age out of the equation for the moment. Let me ask you hypothetically, just for next season, if you could have one out of Icardi or Higuain, who would you rather have and why?
Oh, that's such a good question, especially since we're taking age out of it. And I assume we're not going to tie a manager to it either, because based on managers, I might want a specific striker. Oh, you know what? I'm going to say Icardi. I am going to say Icardi. Higuain so far is just based on the fact that he's been in world football longer. He's definitely the more accomplished player. But for next season, I don't see Icardi slowing down. I don't at all. The one thing he's always been able to do is produce goals. And we've talked about it a lot. Inter, it's not like Inter has had all of these playmakers. They really have not. So his goal production is so impressive, and he really has not had much around him in comparison to Higuain, who was, of course, at Napoli under Sarri, and then, of course, at Juventus, surrounded by talent. I'm not slighting Higuain. I think he's a tremendous striker. And I, as I said, it's a really good question, but I am going to take Icardi. And I know you said to take age out of it, but certainly if we can put age in it, Icardi only being 25, I'll take him. I just think Icardi's only going to get better and better every year. So, David, now that I've given my answer, which really means not a whole lot, I got to ask, could you actually see Mauro Icardi joining Juve?
So the reason I asked you, Alex, is, you know, I'm trying to see, you know, the logic of Juve doing it. Of course, you know, age-wise, Icardi has a huge age, has a huge edge in that regard. But, you know, Napoli, Juve is in win-now mode. So you got to ask yourself, you know, is he an upgrade on Higuain? And I agree with you. He probably is. So this is why, on the surface, this negotiation doesn't sound completely implausible. And look, you know, in previous years, you know, nobody expected Juve to use the clause on Higuain. I don't think, I certainly never expected Fiorentina to sell Bernardeschi to their bitter rival Juve. Certainly never expected Bonucci at Milan. So you never know. But in my honest opinion, as I see it, this looks like just a negotiation ploy. I actually think Icardi's wife agent, Wanda Nara, gets really a bad rap. I actually think she's done quite a good job as his agent. 2 years in a row, she got him a raise and he stayed at Inter. So I think in a lot of ways, this is what's going on too. I just think Inter would be crazy to do the swap because of the age and the cost too. I mean, you think of Higuain, his wages are really huge. So it would be a big cost for Inter. The other thing too with Icardi is he stayed at the club when they weren't in the CL. I'd have a hard time seeing him want to leave when they're actually in it. He really does living in the city of Milan. He recently bought a house there. And look, at Juve, Turin is not that far. But in general, I see it as unlikely that he'd leave Inter altogether. But I think, you know, these rumors and these links here, you know, look to me as a negotiation ploy to get him a new contract. And look, Juve, there's a big rivalry with Inter. I'm sure they really like the fact that this news is out there. It's irking Inter fans. It's kind of keeping a lot of the attention on Inter's transfers on this. So it's kind of a disturbance move as well. So there is some benefit to Juve on this news being out there. But I'd be really, really surprised to see Icardi leave Inter in general, but especially see him at Juve. I do, I'd be very surprised if Higuain leaves Juve, but if he does, I think it's more likely that we'll see him maybe in the Premier League. Juve spent a fortune on him. They've had him for 2 years. They've amortized some of his transfer fee, but it would still have to come back as around 55 to 60 million for Juve not to take a loss on him. Higuain's going to turn 31 later in the year. So let's see if the club's willing to pay that. But my guess is Higuain and Icardi are going to stay put. So, Alex, the last thing I want to ask you, it's definitely been a very busy day today. I woke up to the news that Zidane announced he was leaving Real Madrid. So I wanted to get your reaction to that. How surprised were you by that?
Yeah, I was supremely surprised, David. Really, really stunned. Totally didn't see that coming, as I'm sure many were blindsided by it. 45 years old, a very young manager, 3 Champions League titles in a row. How could anybody have forecasted that? But once I read more about it, looked at it from his perspective, I understand it. I do understand it. First of all, there's no better way to leave than on your own terms and going out on top. He's certainly doing that. He also has great awareness. He had great awareness as a player, and he clearly has it as a person. Maybe he almost can see the future for Real Madrid. Kind of an old roster. Maybe he just wanted to stay ahead of it, keep his resume as a manager super clean and impressive. But I got to tip my cap to him. I'm a big Zidane guy. Well done to have the wherewithal to say, yeah, I'm doing really well, but I want to step away right now. I really commend that. I applaud that. So in my opinion, a really bold, but a really good move from Zidane. I don't see a negative outcome for him. But I still want to ask, what do you think the future is for Zidane, and what do you think the future is for Real Madrid now?
Yeah, it's like I was very surprised by this news as well on the surface. But as you mentioned, there are some reasons why this makes sense. Obviously, he's leaving on top. They were a little bit disappointing in La Liga for sure, but 3 Champions Leagues in a row is definitely incredibly impressive. I saw someone tweeted this, and I'm just going to read it verbatim. This is at @vcalcio, pointed out that Benzema's 30, Marcelo's 30, Modric 32, Ronaldo 33, Ramos 32, Navas 31. Maybe Zidane kind of saw the end of the cycle coming and decided to leave on top. So you got to give him credit there. As far as what I think the future holds for him, my guess is he's probably going to take a year off, take a sabbatical. 2 jobs that make a lot of sense for me are for him to become France's national team coach after the World Cup, or maybe, you know, maybe that makes sense. Or I could see him eventually at Juve someday. So, you know, Juve in my lifetime has always had just Italian managers. The one time they made an exception is when they brought in Deschamps. Granted, that was kind of a weird year when they were relegated to the second division, but Deschamps was brought in. He was a foreigner, but he had the Juve DNA, had played at the club coincidentally with Zidane. So I could see that. I could see a fit there. As far as Real Madrid, It's an interesting situation for them. So, you know, a lot of people have been talking about Pochettino. And even if there isn't an exit clause in his contract with Spurs, I mean, we've seen, and granted, it's a little bit different with a coach, but we've seen a lot of players sign an extension and then be sold right after. And usually you do that because you can get a bigger transfer fee on someone under a longer contract as opposed to someone that's almost out the door because their contract is set to expire. But in a lot of ways, you know, if someone wants to go, especially to a job like Real Madrid, it's not out of the question that that could happen. I don't think that's the most likely scenario. This is just a pure gut feeling. It wouldn't surprise me if Real Madrid goes with an internal candidate that they have already on the staff. Maybe they come out with a name out of left field, like kind of when they hired Rafa Benitez a while back. So let's see what happens there. But I think I have to respect a lot Zidane for leaving while he's on top.
Yeah, kind of a boss move there from Zidane. And selfishly, I also thought, oh, now Eden Hazard is a little less likely to go to Real Madrid. He looks up to Zidane endlessly. So I actually did view that as the one win for Chelsea today in a otherwise very dreary time period for them. All right, David. So this is kind of changing things up here. We did this once upon a time. But now that the Serie A season is over, our winners and losers segment is going to change a little bit. But nonetheless, we still have some winners and losers. So without further ado, who are they?
So Serie A has really been on a roll. Of course, we had the great season, really insane ending with that Inter-Lazio match, just so much drama. And I think Serie A is off to a great start to the transfer window as a league. This is a segment that we'll be doing throughout the summer. I want to like keep tabs on the league as a whole. We'll look at the players that have come into the league, the players that have left, and kind of assess if the talent level has increased. And so far, it's hard to argue that it hasn't. So I figured a good way to recap what's happened so far is to name some winners and losers. The first one for me is Roma and their sporting director, Monchi. You know, the fact that they had such a deep run in the Champions League and they had all the revenues that came with that. Usually this time of year, Roma's looking to sell a big name players because of financial fair play, trying to get their book in order before their fiscal year ends. But because they're in much better shape financially, that hasn't been their focus. And I like that Monchi finally is starting to go for a lot of exciting prospects. That's really what he's known for. Get players, you know, great prospects, develop them, and then maybe resell them for a huge fee. And he's certainly doing that so far. So, of course, we had the official signing of Karic, exciting Croatian midfielder, has been compared to a young Modric. You know, granted, I meet with prospects, I'm always like, it's so easy to overhype them. But we've heard a lot of good things about him. They've been linked to Ajax striker Kluivert. They have an agreement with him. Now they're trying to reach an agreement with Ajax to close that deal. So those would be two very impressive young players coming to the team. They already added depth to the defense by signing Marcano from Porto. He can play as a center back and left back. Hopefully for Roma, it will work out better than Moreno, who had arrived on a free transfer last year. But so far, Roma off to an excellent start. Same with Inter. I think they have to be very happy with their business so far. And I think for Serie A as a whole, it's great that De Vrij ends up staying in the league as opposed to going abroad. I know everyone remembers the last match against Inter, but he's been one of the best center backs in the whole league, actually coming off a season where he was healthy. So Inter gets a really good addition. If they keep all their center backs now, they have a great rotation with Skriniar. They're trying to give Miranda an extension with De Vrij. That's a very impressive trio. And then another exciting prospect other than Koric, who's arriving to Serie A, is Lautaro Martinez. We saw him arrive, take the medical for Inter. And they've also addressed a position of weakness, Asamoah, that's not official yet, but I think that's one of the worst kept secrets out there. So three very impressive additions for Inter. Napoli, you have to definitely name them as winners as it stands now. I think, you know, me as a huge Sarri lover, I'm very disappointed to see him leave the club, but hiring Ancelotti is really quite the statement for them. It really shows the level of club they want to be, and I think it's great that Carletto's coming back to Serie A. And another winner for me is Jorginho. He's very likely going to Manchester City. I think that's a perfect place for him. We know Pep Guardiola's fascination with Sarri and how much he appreciates the way Napoli played. And now Jorginho really was the brains, kind of the focal point of Sarri ball. So it's really a perfect fit for him. But Napoli is making good moves to potentially replace him. Today they met with Sampdoria for Torreira. So they could be end up being, you know, I think they're going to get a player who's slightly different than Jorginho, maybe someone that fits Ancelotti's style better. But Napoli could end up, you know, not really rebuilding, but reloading with players that fit their new manager better. So those are our winners. On the flip side, you know, I don't want to, you know, make it even worse for Milan, but this has really been a rough start to the transfer window for them. That ruling from UEFA was really tough on the club. I think there's a lot of uncertainty. Think of how different it is for Milan compared to this time last year when they had brought in Musacchio. It was the beginning of a summer where there was a lot of excitement. The buzz is pretty much the opposite right now. So let's hope things work out. I'm really of the opinion that the sooner the Elliott Fund takes control of Milan, the better. I think that's actually by far the best outcome. Things might get worse before they get better, but I think if this ownership group stays the way it is, things will never get better. So I'm hopeful once the Elliott Fund comes in, things will improve for Milan, and the sooner that happens, the better. Now, the last two losers, these are two clubs that I have faith are going to turn it around and improve, but as it stands now, we had Lazio, who didn't have a good defense to begin with last season, losing De Vrij. That's a tough blow. Again, they have a great sporting director. They and Tare have a great track record of replacing players, but as of now, they certainly are weakened. And Atalanta as well, a club that I know is going to, you know, develop some players that we don't even know of right now who are going to surprise us. But as of now, they lost two important starters, center back Caldara. They lost one of their starting wing backs in Spinazzola, and they could lose Ilicic, who's coming off a very good season, who has been linked to Inter and Roma. So again, for these losers, Milan, Lazio, and Atalanta, this is just as it stands now, but I'm pretty hopeful they'll be able to turn it around. So now let's get to your fantastic Twitter questions. As always, the transfer window's in full swing. If you want to send us a question, please use the CalcioLand hashtag. We'll be very happy to answer it for you. So which ones are we going to go over today, Alex?
All right, David, let's start with this one. Which club abroad would be a good fit for Max Allegri?
You know, actually, Real Madrid would be a really good fit for him. I actually think Allegri has really shown the demeanor to be at a top, top club. You know, I love Sarri, but Allegri, the way he manages the media, the way he rotates his player, is really an ideal manager for a top, top club, on top of the fact that he's very good tactically. Definitely not as exciting as Sarri, but he really knows how to adjust in game. So I actually think he'd be a really good fit at Real Madrid. I'd be shocked if he left Juve at this point, but down the road that could happen. And I could see him at a club like Manchester United someday, like a top Premier League club. Allegri just has a great situation at Juve. I think it would really have to be a really special club that gives him an intriguing project, because Juve really wants Allegri to be kind of their version of Ferguson and keep him for a while. So when he leaves, I think it's going to be a really massive club that can challenge him and give him maybe more resources than Juve can right now.
All right, David, next Twitter question. Would Mattia Perin be a good signing for Napoli?
So this is a signing that in a lot of ways makes a lot of sense. And I think it makes more sense now that Sarri's gone, because one thing that Sarri really emphasized from the goalkeeper position was ball distribution, which really isn't Perin's strength. I think as a shot stopper, vastly superior to Piperina, who was going to be at Milan but was Napoli's keeper for a while. So I think with Sarri gone, there'd be less emphasis on that, so it would make more sense. But it looks like Pirin is going to sign with Juve. They're negotiating with Genoa. I'm a little puzzled by that. I guess Juve, you know, they really like Szczesny, but they want to make sure they have two really top-notch keepers because they play on so many competitions. I'm not not sure this would be the best move for Perin, but my expectation is that he'll likely be at Juve. The keeper you really hear mentioned more for Napoli is Rui Patricio and Areola from PSG. You know, we talked to Jonathan Johnson a while back. He said that PSG really like Areola, and that's one of the reasons why they really like the idea of having Buffon as kind of be his mentor for a year or two. So that's the situation with the goalkeepers at Napoli.
All right, next Twitter question. Beppe Morata said Milinkovic-Savic is out of Juventus's range financially. David, why do they keep going for cheap options?
So let's begin with the fact, and look, I've been the first one who was very skeptical on Milinkovic-Savic being realistic for Juve, and I saw my colleague Fabrizio Romano just did an interview with Radio VS in Italy, and he thinks it's not totally out of the question, but Juve would have to sell one or maybe two big names to finance the move. Again, you know, I go back to the fact that nobody, Marotta had said as well that Higuain was not realistic, and then he sold Pogba and got it done. So look, you know, a lot of people say that, you know, Marotta is cheap and whatnot, and he's always, you know, trying to pinch pennies and go for cheap players. But this has really been the Juve way for a while. This goes back to the days of Moggia, and everyone talks about the great players Moggi bought, but Moggi also sold a lot of big name players, Baggio, Vieri, Zidane, on and on. This has kind of been the Juve way of being fairly conservative. You know, they're owned by the Fiat group, you know, a group that's, you know, has had some struggles financially. So they kind of try to be balanced on Juve when they've made some big acquisitions in recent years. When they brought in Dybala for around 40 million from Palermo, they sold Vidal. Of course, we know of Pogba and Higuain. So I think if Juve were to get someone like Milinkovic-Savic, it would probably mean selling Pjanic or Dybala on his own, or maybe Pjanic and Alexandro, something along the way. So personally, I wouldn't blame really Marotta for this. I think that's above his pay grade. It's really more of an ownership thing. I do think Juve's revenues, though, have gone up substantially in the past few years because they've been so conservative on the transfer market and the stadium and the runs in the Champions League. They've had a lot more money. So maybe sooner or later, the club could decide, you know what, we're going to go all in. We'll make a big acquisition without making a sale, but it doesn't sound like it will be this year. So I always say, don't blame so much Marotta. What people say that Juve is cheap is something above his own pay grade, in my opinion.
All right, this next one is super interesting. David, could Lucas Torreira join Arsenal?
Yeah, so this Torreira, I think every time we've had a guest on, Alex, to talk about Serie A, when we ask them about stand-up players in the league, I think every single one mentioned Torreira. So he's kind of like a Verratti-type playmaker at Sampdoria, similar body type as Verratti as well. We haven't linked him yet to Arsenal, but for Arsenal fans, as you probably know, Lichtsteiner is almost certainly coming on a one-year deal, granted it's not a Torreira level. Napoli is going hard after him. They have a very good relationship with Sampdoria. You know, they've done deals, Duvan Zapata, Strinic, things like that in recent years. So Torreira right now has an exit clause of 25 million euro, which I think is quite reasonable for a young player of his caliber. It expires by June 30th. Now, Napoli, and this might seem a little bit counterintuitive, would be willing to pay even more than the exit clause, but if they're allowed to pay it over multiple installments. The thing with exit clause, most of them, you have to pay them all up front in one payment, while most transfers of over 20 million euro, I'd say, are usually done in installments. Actually, Roma did something similar with Schick. They paid a little bit more than the clause, as long as they could spread out the payments on multiple years. So it wouldn't surprise me if we see Jorginho leave for Manchester City and Torreira come in to replace him.
All right, this is interesting. David, why do teams utilize release clauses?
So again, I think this goes back to the perspective that you look at things. I think if you look at it from a club's perspective, there's really not much to gain with an exit clause. I would imagine a lot of you guys like to play FIFA on the career mode, and now you can put the release clause or not. And it's really never to your advantage. Even on FIFA, the agent for the players, like, we don't want a release clause. I assume you're fine with that. So to me, the release clause only benefits the player. And for agents, this is a great negotiation ploy. Like, they like to have the potential for an exit for their players. Sometimes, you know, they'll take maybe slightly lesser wages in exchange for having a release clause so they can sell the player a year later. Some clubs, too, are also willing to kind of try to keep the gang together for a year by giving release clause. And I think of Napoli, we talked a lot about the Scudetto pact. Like, they did a lot of extensions to top players, and we've seen Mertens has an exit clause, Hizaj has an exit clause, Goulam has an exit clause. So Napoli got them to agree to deals to stay. And in exchange, they gave them that. So these really benefit the player. And I know most fans look at it more from their club's perspective, but it's really part of the negotiations. It's a give and a take.
Okay, next one, David. Torino were asking for $100 million for Belotti last summer. How much has his value dropped? And can you see him leaving his current club?
So that's his perfect example of an exit clause. And those have listened to the podcast know that I get very passionate on this Belotti exit clause. It drives me crazy when people say, why would Torino think that Belotti is worth $100 million? In this case, and his clause, they put such a huge clause because they wanted to have control over the player. This is one time where the clause kind of benefited the club more than the player. They gave Belotti a big raise for their standards, and they're like, okay, we'll put an exit clause of $100 million. So again, it wasn't because they think he's worth that. They were like, you know, if someone's crazy enough to pay him, we'll play ball, but if not, we're going to keep him. And actually, last summer, maybe people don't remember this, Atletico came pretty close to meeting that valuation. Granted, they were willing to insert some players as part of the deal, so it wasn't that crazy on the market. Now, as the listener that sent in the question pointed out, Belotti had a difficult season. It was mainly due to injuries. So there's no doubt that I don't think any club would come close to paying $100 million for him, maybe half of that at this point. But again, I want to stress, it's not like Torino was like that upset that they got to keep him. So my guess is he'll probably stay another year. He's still young. I think he's 24, might turn 25 this year. So they have time to get him back on track. So my guess is he stays. Torino tries to see if his value goes up. So, Alex, I have a question for you. This came in, and I think it's you're much more equipped to answer this. So what do you think of Batshuayi, who didn't really fit in with Conte but has done really well at other clubs? Do you see him as someone that could become like a top striker if he's put in the right circumstances?
I certainly do. I really do. I'm a Michy Batshuayi apologist. I was so encouraged when he was purchased from Marseille by Chelsea. It was coming off a season where he had 17 goals and 9 assists. And Marseille is no slouch of a team. I hate when people discredit anybody doing well in Ligue 1. That's not for me. And then, of course, Michy, as you said, didn't really fit well with Conte, but he goes over to Borussia Dortmund. And in his 9 games, he was fantastic. He has all the skills to do it. He's still only 24. I mean, that's still awfully young. I actually think under someone like Sarri, he would be very, very good. But he doesn't have a lot of weaknesses to his game. He really doesn't. I mean, he has some mental lapses. He'll get caught offside too much. But he has all of the ability in the world. And you don't really see him featuring for his country because Lukaku is, at least at this point, better. I actually think there's less holes in Michy Batshuayi's game than Lukaku, but there's been some bad luck for Michy Batshuayi. That's my opinion. But I absolutely am hopeful for Michy Batshuayi's future. If Chelsea were to acquire Sarri as their manager, I would fully be in favor of not spending money on a striker and bringing Michy Batshuayi back. I honestly think he would do. I think he would flourish under a manager like Sarri. But at this point, he just hasn't had the right situation for him at Chelsea. But yes, given the right environment, absolutely he would thrive. So, David, we're going to move a little bit away from football. It's still kind of tied in. How much of an impact do your interactions on social media have on the podcast and your articles?
So I haven't achieved much in this field by any means, but whatever little success I've achieved, I actually think is largely driven by how much I try to interact with people, mainly on Twitter. It really gives me a pulse of what people are interested in, what they want more of. I think on our podcast, almost always the best segment is this one. When we go over the questions, our listeners come up with really great stuff. So I think that's so important. I've also, I got to tell you, based so many specifically of my articles on interactions I've had with people, I actually try to really talk to people that have a completely different point of view than mine. And then I kind of write my articles based on my interactions with people. So if you're kind of an aspiring writer coming up, not that I achieved much by any means, if you want to learn some tips, you know, listen to some older episodes when he talked to some really, really great writers. But I would tell you, I really encourage people to interact on social media. You'll really get some really good ideas. And it also really gives me a sense of what people want more of. So when I write my articles for ESPN, when I go over the big transfer rumors of the week, it's really based on the types of questions that I get from people. So I'm a big fan of that. Look, you know, there are some downsides to the social media for sure, but I think, you know, there's really a lot to gain from it as well.
Yeah, I know people really appreciate when you reply to them, especially when you're answering the same question over and over, still replying. I can speak from experience. Years and years and years ago, I'd bother you about Pogba, and you still replied. So, you know, not everybody does that. Not to kiss your ass too much here. Let's move on. David, let's move away from football. Which movie do you prefer between Casino and Goodfellas?
So everyone sit down. I got a hot take for you because I know almost everyone would say Goodfellas. But me personally, I think I like Casino a little bit better. And I'll tell you why. Like, I think Goodfellas is probably the most rewatchable movie ever. Like, I must have seen that movie probably 100 times. It's no exaggerations. I mean, I'm 41. I've been around for a while. I've seen that movie a ton of times. Like, I know it by heart. Basically, it has some beats that work really well. But I do think the last part of Goodfellas, once the cocaine gets in, and I think that's by design, gets a little bit crazy. There are kind of a little bit of plot holes in it too. I think Casino, definitely not as funny as Goodfellas, because Goodfellas really could almost be a comedy and it'd be hilarious aside from the mob stuff. Casino's definitely much more serious, but I think it's better. And again, you know, it's purely subjective. Aside from the fact that I think it's a more consistent movie that doesn't have kind of a third act that's a little bit of a mess, when I look too at the actors, to me it's superior. Like, I like Ray Liotta in Goodfellas, and he's the main character in the movie, but he's no Bob De Niro. I think De Niro's performance in Casino is incredible. The female character, like Sharon Stone in Casino, really incredible. Like, when that movie came out, you know, she had done Basic Instinct. She was really the hot actress, but you know, she wasn't really known for her acting chops, and I think she's incredible in that movie. Certainly much better than the female character in Goodfellas, which then ended up being Tony Soprano's shrink on The Sopranos later on. I think vastly better. Also, for me, you know, when Casino first came out around that time, I was in a relationship that kind of reminded me a little bit of the dynamic between De Niro and Sharon Stone's character, so I always kind of really felt really attached to that movie for that. I actually think Joe Pesci's fantastic in that as well. So I like Casino slightly better. But again, if Goodfellas on, I'm going to watch it every time. Casino, I'd probably have to be in the right mood to watch it. So you guys know I love movie questions. Keep them coming. What's the last question we have today, Alex, though?
All right, Dave. The last question is, what was the Nine Inch Nails physical presale of tickets like?
So if you guys know Nine Inch Nails, probably one of my five favorite bands ever. I just love everything about them. I've seen them live a bunch of times. So they're going on tour this fall. They're doing a tour of the U.S. And they really wanted to do something a little bit different with the sales of the tickets. They didn't put the tickets on sale online at first. You actually had to go to the physical place where the concert was taking place. So for me, look, it worked out well. I live in Boston. The concert was in Boston, so pretty easy for me. I went there, you know, pretty early, but there was an insane line to get in. It actually was a really good experience. And I think one of the reasons why they did this is they didn't want the tickets to go to scalpers online. You know, there's people that have algorithms on Ticketmaster. They can get all the best seats almost right away. So look, you know, some of the tickets were sold on the secondary market after the pre-sale, but this was people, almost all fans, that then decided to cash in. Like, I bought a bunch of tickets. I actually considered maybe selling some, but I think I'm going to keep them all. So I thought it was a very big success in that sense. I also think it was awesome because they really promoted human interaction. You're there with people that like the same type of music, you know, kind of a lot of people in my age range. A lot of I had a really, really long talk. Like, I was online for such a long time to get these tickets. I almost felt like my life was passing by. While I was waiting, I saw Buffon playing his last game for Juve. I saw Balotelli going back to the Azzurri. I was like, what is going on? This was all in the span of this. But, you know, overall, it was a very good experience. I was in line, I'm not even kidding, about 6 hours, and I ended up still getting great seats, meeting a lot of cool people that I'm going to hang out with again at the show. So I think as a whole, that was a really well done event. It really promoted human interaction. To give you an idea, 2 days after, instead of going to the ATM to get cash, I decided to go in and talk to the teller for like 2 minutes. So I thought that was actually a pretty cool thing to do. We live in a world where we're almost trying to get away from human interaction as much as possible. And I thought that was an enjoyable experience. So this is the show for today. We don't have a guest. I'm in Phoenix at a conference. Alex is sick. But we really love doing this podcast. We're really dedicated to the show. There's been a lot going on. So if you enjoy what you hear, please really help us grow. There are a couple of things that you can do. We're really on the verge of taking the podcast to the next level. So we really appreciate your support. You can help us, of course, by tweeting about our podcast, telling your friends, retweeting what we do, sending us in questions with the CalcioLand hashtag. And another thing you can do is leave us reviews and ratings. I know I talk about this all the time, but it actually really does make a big difference. If you're listening to us on your iPhone now, please go on iTunes right now. It'll take you 2 seconds to leave us a 5-star review. If you want to leave a comment, Alex and I read them all, and we really appreciate it. If you're listening to us on Android, subscribe to us on whatever platform you're on. Starting in June, we're going to go back to trying to do 3 episodes a week. We're going to do our best to keep you as informed and entertained the best way we can during the transfer window. So we appreciate your support, and we look forward to more episodes coming up.